thing of do or die deadlines. It goes on to say that school administrators don't like it because it punishes them if they don't make adequate progress. And it goes on to say school officials also have rebelled at requirements that students with limited English ability or with learning disabilities perform at the same level or grade level as normal students. So I'm reading this kind of stuff. There's another piece here on education. I love getting into the education stuff. And it says, researchers say money alone can't fix ailing schools. Okay? Providing California children with a quality education could easily cost an additional $32 billion, about 56% more than what the state now spends, according to studies released Thursday. And then it goes on to say there's little consensus on the relationship between the sources between sources of funding and achievement. And I'm reading all this stuff, and I'm trying to decide, what do I want to talk to? We're in the middle of a war in Iraq. Actually, as far as I'm concerned, I don't even know quite what to call it. You can call it a war, but when you start to look at military battles in the past, I've watched a lot of stuff like that on the History Channel recently. It's hard to really call it a war. There's a lot of sectarian violence there. There's a lot of infighting between the Iraqis, but we went in there, nearly 4 years ago now, and pretty much the war is over, and we're trying to hang around until, they stabilize themselves over there and kind of get it together so they can have a reasonable government. But we're complaining about that. We don't have a lot of tolerance for things that take a long time. And it's coming up on the fourth year. Congress is getting anxious. They rejected a bill yesterday to cut the funding, but the American public doesn't have a lot of taste for war. Anyway, the whole point is there's a lot of crazy, nasty stuff going on in the world. So I was thinking about, well, what do we talk about? How can we talk about all that? There's a lot of that stuff we can talk about. It's talked about ad nauseum. And then I realized that approximately maybe 6 months ago, on doing the Noon Balloon Show, I did a show that was basically entitled Back to the 60s. And we sat down and we had did a little bit of a nostalgia there. And I thought, well, we could either do local news talk or news talk of our current day, or we could take a little nostalgia tour back to the past and just kind of look at when things were maybe a little bit simpler, or see where we've come from there. Now, by the way, I grew up in the 60s. I would not say that everything was cherries and roses. You still had the same, you had problems back then, as well as now. But certainly things were a little bit more clear cut for people. So I'm going to try and go down that road for a bit, and we can leave our local current day and age politics behind, and we'll see if we can have some fun as we go back in time and look at what things were like, you know, 40 years ago, 60s, 40, almost 50 years ago now, and see where we've come from them, from there, and take it to that point. You know, one of the things, when I did the drive time this week for Charlie Friedman, after the show, I was able to sit around the studio for a couple minutes with the board ops, with Dave and Everson, who is the business manager here, and we were chatting, and I was struck by the following. I told them the following. When I got out of the Army in 1970, a friend of mine and I were looking for a place to rent when we went to college. And a real estate agent told us, she said, well, you know exactly what you're looking for, but they don't want to rent it. They want to sell it. Would you look at it? And we said, sure, we'll look at it, but we have no interest whatsoever in buying. We can't afford to buy. We're not interested in that. She took us to this house, and it was just beautiful. Gorgeous little place, is exactly what we wanted. It was relatively close to the junior college that we were starting out in. And they wanted $19,500 for it. This is 1970, 71. And we go in there, oh, you sure they won't rent? You sure they won't rent? Sure they won't rent? She said, nope, no, they want to sell it. They want to sell it. Well, you know, as it turns out, short of the long story, my friend's father co-signed for the loan. We got a conventional loan, and our down payment on the house was $1,200. Had to come up with $1,200 cash. Total monthly payment and property taxes came to about $180 a month. There was myself, my friend. It was a three-bedroom house with a den and living room and kitchen, all that kind of stuff. Nice little front yard, relatively good-sized backyard, which we had fenced off because we had dogs. So here we are in college in 1970-71, and total monthly operating expenses for rent and utilities while I'm in college in 1971 ran about $70 or $80 a month. $70 or $80 a month. Gas in at that point in time, the early 70s, it was before the Carter era where we had the gas prices go through the roof. I think it was around 30 cents a gallon. Now, it's interesting. I've done a lot of shows on economics here on KSCO, and I'm always interested. We're always concerned that we are sending business overseas, and we're taking away jobs. And I always tell people that what really matters is buying power, what your dollar can buy. It's less important what you make than what your money can buy. You can, you know, if you paid everybody $1,000 an hour, which I'm sure Dave would love to have as an income, $1,000 an hour, but if everything went up dramatically, well, everyone's, well, first of all, at $1,000 an hour, everyone's making the same, so the price of everything goes up. So anyway, here I'm talking with these young men. I was able to live in 1970-71 after I got out of the Army on the GI Bill, which paid at that particular point in time $125 a month and a little part-time job. I remember that was a period of time when, boy, if I ever make $500 a month or $1,000 a month, boy, I'll be styling. I will be rich.
How long ago was that, Vernon?
That, as I told you, 1971, probably 35 years ago now.
Actually, so, that was 33 years ago because I was born in 72.
Well, 70 and 30 is, and it's 2007. That's around 37 years, isn't it? From 1970 to 2007. And Dave's a sharp young man.
Hey, thanks.
He got it. So anyway, to get back this thing, you know, as I told them, you know, here they are, they're working, people are struggling, technology's come a long way, we have a lot of good things, but we've lost a lot of the simplicity of those days gone by, and I thought that if you were interested, we could have a little fun with that. We could go back a little bit in time. So there's a site on the internet that has a lot of statistics and data that I pulled up. So we're going to do a little bit of that stuff right now. And if you don't like it, we'll get back to the nasty stuff of today. So, you know, as it turns out, did you know that back in the 60s, the unemployment rate was 5.5%? 5.5%. Well, we're under that today. So I guess we've come a long ways, right? We've come a long ways. 5.5% unemployment's actually dropped. Things are better. But are they? Are they? People ask me all the time how I feel about the economic situation. And I tell them, well, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can measure it. You can measure it by unemployment rates. You can measure it another way. And one of the things that I've noticed is that when the economy is bad locally, you see it in business. You know, when you go out on a Saturday afternoon, you go down to Orchard, not as many people there. So that from looking around at the business on Saturdays, I go to Orchard Hardware Supply to get stuff to work on my house. It's busy. The economy looks good there, but then people say, well, you know, people are losing their homes. I recently heard a piece on the radio last Saturday when driving home that they're having terrible problems in Florida. The people are falling behind on their mortgages. They can't pay them. And the real estate market is depressed and that houses that are dropping in their sale price so that people that bought houses for a certain amount, new houses especially, those new houses have dropped in price. It's not even worth what they paid for it. They can't hold on to them. They're throwing them out. So in terms of unemployment rate, clearly, things are better today, if you believe those numbers, than they were in the 60s. But 5.5% is not too bad. The national debt in the 60s was $286 billion. How many trillion is it today? 8-9 trillion? Huge. Huge, huge difference. We've gone into tremendous debt in this country over those 47 years right now. Since the beginning of the 60s. The average salary was, get this, folks, $4,743 per month. Can anyone live on $4,000? I said annual, and that's what it was. Can anyone live on $4,743 per year right now? Whoa, things have inflated. Average salary, $4,743 per month. A teacher's salary, get this, teacher's salaries back then, you're going to get a kick out of this one here, was $5,174 per year.
That's pretty good.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I hadn't looked that one up. I've done a lot of stuff on education. But even back in the 60s, teachers made more than the average annual salary.
Is it that way now?
Yeah.
Is it really?
It really is.
It's, well, how much is it, though? I mean, I'm sure it's not enough to buy a house. I mean, I can't
Dave, you don't listen. You don't listen to me enough. They did a study that came up not that far back that in the demographics that more teachers by occupation own homes and homes in their communities than the average population. The minimum wage was a dollar an hour. I remember that. I remember that very clearly, folks, because in 1965 when I graduated, the minimum wage was a dollar an hour, and the following year it went up to a whole dollar and a quarter an hour. I remember working a night shift, dollar and a quarter an hour, graveyard shift in a gas station, 11 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock the following morning, this little one-bay station. Take me back in time. Okay, the first class stamp was 4 cents. I was right. A gallon of gas was 31 cents. A McDonald's hamburger was 15 cents. Talk about buying power. 15 cents for a burger. I think you can get the cheapest burgers today for about a buck. And a new brand new Chevrolet was $2,529. You can call me, folks, 479-1080. You can fax me at 475-2967. My name is Vernon Bohr. In for MZ on a Saturday special. We're taking a little bit of a nostalgic look back at the 60s and comparing the 60s from today. Right now, I've been opened up the show and I talked about some of the stuff in the news today. Researchers say that money alone can't fix our schools. Our schools are ailing. We spent more than ever. And the one article I threw out there says we need to throw in an additional $32 billion, about 56% more than what the state now spends. Okay. I opened up with an article that went on to say that that in fact they want to loosen the standards on the No Child Left Behind program. So what's happening here is we want to say we're successful by releasing and lowering standards. We have a program called No Child Left Behind. In 2007, what we want to do is we want to alter that program so we look good, like kids are learning something, okay? By reducing the standards, we can't expect kids to learn to the standards of the past. That's what I opened with. And then I said, that's kind of depressing, folks. I do a lot of shows. I do a lot of talk radio. I do a lot of political talk. And I thought, well, maybe you might want a respite out there, a little break. Maybe you might want to take a break from 2007 and look back in time and look at where we've come from there. And I went on to say that, you know, what really matters is buying power. And with the start of that, in fact, we're looking at some of the statistics of the 60s. And the unemployment was 5.5%. Average salary is $4,743. If you're out there and you're a young person today, do you think you could make it on $4,000 a year? Actually, $4,000 a year is about half what the minimum wage is now. I'll calculate that on the break. Minimum wage was a buck an hour. A buck an hour, folks, could buy a hamburger at McDonald's for 15 cents. I used to live in San Bernardino where the first McDonald's started. The stamp was, stamp was 4 cents. Gas was 31 cents a gallon. Popcorn at the movies was 20 cents, and a soda was a dime.
You're lying.
Folks, you know, I got a lot of you on the line, and I'm going to start taking your calls here shortly, so I think we should probably do our first commercial break so I can start taking calls uninterrupted. Let's throw one last thing out there. A brand new Chevy cost $2,529. Folks, you're listening to the Saturday special with Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cube. A bunch of you dropped off the lines, but listen to the commercials. We'll be right back, and we'll start taking calls.
If you have trees or brush that need cutting or removal, there's a guy I think you should know about. If you have a bunch of stuff you want to clean out and need a dumpster, there's a guy I think you should know about. And it's the same guy. His name is Adolfo Garcia, and he works at Community Tree Service and Dumpster Rentals. boy, does he work at Community Tree Service and Dumpster Rentals. In fact, he owns Community Tree Service and Dumpster Rentals with its efficient army of trucks, chippers, and other equipment that can get any tree or demolition job, large or small, done quickly with no nonsense and at a fair price. Pretty impressive for someone who's only 31 years old and built this business from nothing in just a few years. Got a tree job or need a dumpster? Call Community Tree Service at 763-2391. Talk to Regina or Naomi and let them take care of you. 763-2391. That's 763-2391. 763-2391.
Life's good at the beach. Hello, I'm Joe Criccio, owner of Beach Auto Sales in Santa Cruz, where life is good. One reason why life is so good at Beach Auto Sales is that we save you money, a lot of money, on the best pre-owned cars, trucks, and vans you'll find anywhere, like Beach Auto's Deal of the Week. Listen to this.
Save $10,000 on a 2006 Mazda MPV with only 13,000 miles. Comes with a four-year, 50,000-mile factory warranty, two available for only $16,989.
Save money on your next car, truck, or van. Make a quick trip to see Joe Criccio at Beach Auto Sales in Santa Cruz. Located down by the beach where life's good, I'm at 512 Pacific Avenue. And hey, if you have any special car or truck in mind, give me a ring. I'll find it for you. I'm Joe Criccio, owner of Beach Auto Sales. 4200-200. That's right. My phone number is 4200-200. 4200-200.
Life's good at the beach.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
The world is changing daily. Old familiar views don't seem to work anymore, and that's why there's Embassy of the New World Order, the one and only foreign affairs radio broadcast, where all politics are global, Sundays at 11 a.m. Greetings and salutations. I'm Cyril Vatomsky, your progressive multicultural ambassador of the New World Order, and I am here to offer you tools and information to better navigate through murky waters of international politics. I will gladly listen to your opinions and will be happy to tell you where you are wrong. Join me for the free weekly foreign affairs seminar, The Embassy of the New World Order, Sundays at 11 a.m. on KSCO.
Okay, folks, back here with you on the Saturday special. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. In for MZ, when we went to the break, we were talking about the 60s in contrast to today. And as I sat here during the break, this No Child Left, this Money on Can't Fix Schools is very interesting. I'll throw this stuff out to you real quick and we'll get back to the 60s. It says one study estimates education spending needs to increase 40%. Yet even that huge jump it found would leave half the school districts unable to reach the state expectations for achievement. Now that's a travesty, and I want to know why. But we're talking about something a little lighter here, a time when things seem to be a little simpler. We're going to go to the airwaves right, go to the callers right now. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, Vernon.
How you doing?
Well, let's get into the salaries then and now. Would you say it's about $4,600 a year was the average salary?
That's it. Yeah, $4,743. That's $4,500, $4,800.
No, minimum wage was a dollar. That's about $2,000 a year.
Yeah, about half the average salary.
Right. And now, it's what is it now? It'd be about $11,000, I think, for minimum wage. And
yeah, it just went up to the 5.25, 5.75, whatever it was. I think it was around $8,000 a year or something like that.
Well, it should be if you work 2,000 hours a year, which is, fairly average.
Mm-hmm.
It should be about $11,000. a little over. Anyway, but what's the average what do people make today on average?
Well, you've got the average and median. The median family income in Santa Cruz, I think the last time I checked, it's been a while, was around $52,000 a year, with the average family and the average per capita income around $26,000.
You mean the median is the average? Well, is that for Santa Cruz County?
Yes, yes.
Wow. So the median is the one you really want to look at.
Well, it depends on how you want to deal with the data, Bruce. Okay, the fact of the matter is the median, since it's based on a family income, and the average family has 2-point-something people,
you
probably got something there with that income is made up of more than one person working.
Right, right, okay.
So if you're going to do that, and whereas the average salary is the average salary per working person, and that would be probably more in line with what I read from the 60s here, where it says the average salary was $4,743, but we don't really know where they got that number.
Well, you know, the average teacher makes close to $60,000 now.
Yes.
Years ago it was 53, and I don't have the almanac in front of me, but the average teacher makes close to $60,000. Two teachers would make close to $120,000. They could buy a house, but the thing is, they are making twice what the median family income is. Each teacher is making twice.
Each teacher makes at least what the median or more.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, what you just cited is a salary. I know that teachers out there are going to think we're picking on them. We're just trying to tell the truth. You've actually left out the benefit packages that are on that they have in addition to the salaries.
Yeah, the retirement is going to break California. But the product that they put out has gone downhill. We didn't spend nearly as much in proportion to our income on students back in the, 60s and 70s. But I think the student is different. I think kids now, you have to entertain them. You don't really, used to be that you wanted to get good grades, you try. So if you look at the dropout rate today, which is what in this county, it's probably something like 30%. And if you average those in with the bleak educational levels that they're producing in this county, it would drag it down even more.
Well, I think that, when you bring that stuff up, I think what we've really run into is a whole society in which parents have totally abrogated their responsibilities of their child's education in the schools. They want to blame the schools rather than realizing that I don't care who you blame, you've left a child uneducated out there in the world that's going to have to fend for themselves.
Well, I think the student has changed. I think we need to change education to fit the student.
Okay, how are we going to do that?
Well, I think you have to use more computers and have entertaining education. I don't see why it wouldn't be possible to learn history through, by watching a movie, as long as they don't do revisionist history like a lot of these historical things are. But kids I used to go out with a teacher, and my complaint then was the kids that spent so much time in front of the TV that she was a second grade teacher, and I said, if you had yourself on a monitor, more kids would watch you on a monitor if it was voluntary than would watch you in front of the class. Kids just love to watch TV. And so I think some kind of computer games that would, teach them math, or you could make teaching so that it is interesting.
I agree, but let me say one other thing, okay, and then I'm going to have you wrap up because I got to go on to another caller. Here's one of the things that I think about. These are my thoughts, okay, is that in growing up, school for kids is their counterpart of a job growing up. And when you grow up in life, one of the things, the lessons you need to learn is that what you do to forward your life isn't always entertaining, fun, and interesting. And so maybe one of the things that needs to be learned in schools is discipline. And I'm not saying that you need to make school boring, but now you pander to a whole group of kids in school. They get out of school, and now they can't figure out why they should have to work in jobs that are uninteresting.
I heard an 8-year-old 2 days ago. No. He's 11. And his mom asked him to do something very simple. And he said, well, why should I do something if I'm not going to get rewarded for it? And, until that day, I thought an awful lot of that kid because he's real, real bright. But, boy, I look at him differently now. If he's starting to think like that at 11.
Yeah, and the fact is what I would say is his mom, what pops into my mind is you're being fed. Your parents are feeding you, clothing you, and putting a roof over your head. That's your reward for being a good kid.
Well, thanks, Bruce,
thanks for the call. 479-1080, folks. Fax me at 475-2967. Asa, a little nostalgia.
Well, I love nostalgia, but I have to get down to the basic thing, which mine, of course, was a little before yours, but, of course...
And times were tougher than mine because you went through the Depression.
Well, yeah, but I used to be able to go to the movies for 10 cents and buy the candy bar for a nickel. You know, my friends and I were not afraid to go to the movies at night on the street by ourselves in town.
And your parents could let you go.
Well, honey, they didn't even worry about it until they called it was time for dinner. And if nobody expected us to get lost or stolen. They just expected us to come home in time for dinner, not be late.
Well, same when I was growing up, even though I'm a little younger than you, and when you bring that up, one of the other things I throw in the mix is what have we mortgaged our souls for? Because on the one hand, we live in a culture and society that's got a lot of material wealth and goods, but at the same time, you can't just turn your kids loose. Go ahead.
No, but the point is something has evolved. The world has evolved in some kind of a funny place. I mean, the ball is not round. It's kind of one of those odd, like bocce ball or something. I don't know quite where it's rolling. But and when I think of there was no minimum wage, of course. Well, there was no minimum wage. We had no Medicare because there was no medical. I mean, and the insurance companies had not taken over the world. As far as I know, the lady that helped us clean our house, she got cancer, and my granddaddy put her in the hospital and paid the bills. And there was nothing in the contract that said he had to do that. And there was none of us that would have begrudged her any of it. And I mean, it's totally attitude. The attitude is so bizarre to me, from a place that was what is in retrospect, you know, is an impossible loss of freedom, and the children. People, we had choices. Nobody ever had to dictate what we did. I mean, we made up things as we went along. I mean, we were not always peachy keen little kids, but nobody knew it. We didn't form groups.
Well, you're old enough children knew how to entertain themselves. We didn't have television, of course. I didn't have
radio.
Yeah, you're before me, so you didn't have radio. I don't know, you know, by the way, even though there was radio around when I was a child, I don't think I started to listen to it much until I was 10, 11, 12, 15. But that's interesting. You remember the old roller skates with the key?
Oh, sure.
Yes,
I do.
And when you needed, when you had a pair that kind of fell apart, wasn't as good.
Oh,
you had
to clip them on your shoe.
Yeah. And you used to take the old pair apart and you used to nail them to a board to make a skateboard-like thing.
We didn't have, no, our skateboard had not worked its way up to my head.
Well, we didn't try and make skateboards. No. We tried to make little scooters.
Well, you were fellas. We were girls. We didn't. but I just think of the freedom that we had, and even when we got out of school, even after the war, we had the freedom. It was not an impossible dream to get an apartment. Children could leave home if they wanted to. Now they have to stay home even if they don't want to.
And maybe now they stay home because, you know,
no place to go.
The getting's better than going out on your own. Why should I leave when the refrigerator's full here?
But nobody was afraid that the doctors were all going to leave town because they didn't make any money. Nobody was afraid that there was, you know, nobody was worried about the intentions of the person that they were dealing with. They were always felt, I mean, we lived in a benign world in comparison to this one. I don't know what's happened to this one. I have a tendency to blame it all on the drugs. The world changed with the drugs, but I don't know. And with the fact that the dollar, for some reason or other, has vanished from our sight.
Well, Asa, you know, I don't know if it was all the drugs. There's an interesting thing there I'm going to leave you with and get your comment on is I've always been amazed at the thought of my generation in the 60s and the late 50s when Elvis came around, because this was a generation that for the first time had money that their parents allowed them to have put in their pocket. They had jobs and they could go out and do things other than just chores. And
but
it
was the drugs.
Well, that's a good one. We can need to talk about that. And are the drugs still driving the society? Asa, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the topic.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
479-1080, folks. You can fax me at 475-2967. Oh, I forgot to drop Asa, and she's talking in the background there. Folks, we're talking about, I opened the show talking about today, and I opened the show talking about, with two articles. One, researchers say money alone can't fix ailing schools. I want to get back to that one because that one really is interesting. And I juxtaposed that to a nostalgic look at the 60s. And I threw out some figures there. Asa just made some comments that we have lost our freedom for all our technological stuff. And I'm really interested in what you have to say about that, because clearly I would not let my granddaughters out of my sight today. I would not let them run free the way I was able to run free growing up. And so that's an interesting concept, because right now my one granddaughter is almost driving age and wants a new car when she gets out of high school. When we were growing up, you didn't get a car when you graduated from high school. Actually, she's not graduating from high school at 16. She'll be a sophomore or so. And now we live in a time where kids have all manner of stuff and things aren't working. What do you have to say about that? Let me throw a couple more things about this ailing money alone can't fix ailing schools, because I think it's fascinating. As I said to you, one study estimates education spending needs an increase of 40%. I have a question here. Why do we need to spend that much money on education, especially in grades 1 through 4 or 5? Where have the costs of education risen so much? How has the cost of paper, pencils, the beginning years of education risen so much that we cannot educate children in our current state budget, which is we're pouring around $56 to $60 billion a year into education, around $12,000 a year per student?
You know, Vernon, I don't know how it works for the grades, you know, that small, but I know with books that I have to buy for Cabrillo, they mark those prices incredibly high. It's ridiculous. And if they have to buy anywhere, if they pay anything near what we have to pay for books, and they use a big amount of paper and pencils and crayons and all that stuff, if they're paying what we have to pay, that's where
the public's paying the amount for books, and books get used over and over in the grade schools and high school.
Yeah, but they tear them out, they tear pages out, they color on everything, you know, then they have art supplies and all that stuff. It gets expensive.
But what you're saying, see, Dave, what you're justifying is ill behavior on behalf of the student in terms of destroying public property.
Well, no, Vernon, they do it to make art projects. It's called art, not destruction.
Oh, okay, you're saying that they buy certain books to tear pages out of to do art projects.
Right, right.
This article goes on to say that they ignored, for instance, in the studies, Proposition 13, the 1978 tax limiting measure that slashed school revenues and effectively transferred responsibility for education to the state. I have never heard so much nonsense, folks. You need to understand, Prop 13 was it saved the homeowner, number one, but it was a boon for gathering money. There are so many other hidden taxes today, and given the fact that the property values have escalated so much over the years, the schools have gotten untold additional revenue and income. 479-1080, you can fax me at 475-2967. One study estimated the state would have needed to increase spending by 53 to 71% or $24.1 billion to $32 billion in 2004-2005 school year to adequately educate students. I don't understand this. I really don't. 479-1080. I'm going to go ahead and take some calls here, because you get people seem to be interested in this. And by the way, remember, the children are our future. Scott, you're on the Saturday special.
Amen, Vern. The children are basically now just chair fillers for the union profit. I heard Lieutenant Governor Tom McClintock say that in 16 months, our California government will be insolvent because of the education. I think the mafia runs the education system. But, you know, for example, where the money is going, it's not for pencils and paper. The principal at Redwood was making $360,000, if I'm not mistaken, per year. And he traded up to push pencils as an administrator for $480,000. What kind of, this is the kind of money. This is the kind of money that, that the union can bless you with. You know, not to mention the insane, they're teaching lifestyles that are as dangerous or more dangerous to children's health than drug abuse. You know, you can get AIDS and stuff they're teaching in schools, these secret abortions. I say, Vernon, we need a constitutional amendment outlawing public employee unions.
I would get on that bandwagon because I don't know why you need a public employee union because public employees are right at the top of the food chain in terms of what we pay them and in terms of their benefits and everything. I'm certainly behind you on that one. But, you know, Scott, were you the one that asked me a bit, let's see, a couple shows back on Charlie's show, what can we do? Your voice sounds familiar.
Yeah, that was me.
I started to do that yesterday on the Noon Balloon, and here's what I want to throw out to you. I have fought tax battles before, and here's where you need to start, people. Okay, I want you to write this down. Very simple, okay? Because I think that this is like urban fighting in Iraq. You got to take things back door by door. And the way you do it, you get 5 or 10 of your neighbors together, people you like. You know, people get along. And you say, hey, let's get together for coffee or something, and you all throw like $20 into the kitty. Okay? That's $100. Well,
right.
Given the fact that the postage has gone up, mailing is going to go up more, but you use that as seed money. Maybe you get a bulk mailing permit, or maybe you just buy stamps to begin with. Go
right.
down to the county, and the database of all the eligible voters.
Okay.
Is available there to people. That's a public
true.
Record.
Public record.
You know, with computers the way they are today, you know, you might need to learn a little bit about databases, but you know, there's someone there that can figure out how to get it. It used to be when I used to do this years ago, I used to have to get a tape down there. I used to have to take it to someone who could format the tape and then dump the data onto to disks and stuff. Today it's all in Excel and spreadsheet
mm-hmm.
type stuff.
Sure.
Now you got a mailing list and you start to look. So what you do, the first thing you do is you start to send stuff out to people. Did you know? How can you contact us? Larry is just going to get ready to get to you, but he dropped. Can you
a newspaper. Essentially a newspaper.
Yeah, you start sending stuff out. And you know what I've done on some? I used to send out stuff on brightly colored paper with skull and crossbone stuff on it.
Warning. Oh, that gets their attention.
You know, something to get someone's attention. And you let people know you need money for mailing, you need stuff to get together. And you start to work on a one-by-one basis, and that's how you organize, because most of us don't have time to go to a lot of meetings. So that's one little tip out there.
That's inspiring.
That's where you start. You start in your community where you can. So, you know, and you start with a few people. You know, everyone can ante up $20-$30. You get something because it does take time and money. But when you do it that way, not one single person has to shoulder the whole load.
It's brilliant, Vernon. I'm going to do it.
Scott, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. 479-1080, folks. Fax me at 475-2967. Marcella, you're on the air.
Hi, Vernon.
How are you today?
Just fine. Let me tell you the real reason why education is going through the roof. It has nothing to do with unions. The real reason is because, let me preface this by saying I'm a baby boomer. When I was growing up, there was no such thing as special education. There was no such thing as mandatory vaccinations. Now one in every five children either has a behavioral or a neurodevelopmental problem. Have you gone to your local school and seen at least 3 to 4 classrooms full of special ed kids? These kids cost 3 to 4 times what the typical student cost, maybe $20,000. Now, the majority of these children are autistic. And let me give you a statistic that you don't hear about on the mainstream media. Last year, 2006, there was like an 18% increase in severe autism cases from 2005. There were approximately 4,000. We're talking about the severe autistics, not the semi-nerdy, intelligent ones. We're talking about the ones like my young son, who is 13, not potty trained, nonverbal. And you go into these special education classes, there's one teacher, and there's going to be 4 or 5 aides. It takes that amount of people to handle these kids because they have behavioral problems. And the reason why they have behavioral problems is because their brains have been damaged from these mandatory vaccines. We're up to almost 60 vaccinations, and people don't know that they have philosophical exemptions, medical and religious exemptions. They just passed this new HPV vaccine for girls, but they don't tell you that a lot of these girls are fainting like 10 minutes after they get the vaccination. They're getting seizures.
Marcella, listen. I could ask you a bunch of questions, but here's the one I'm going to ask you, okay? Fact of the matter is, if that's the problem, mm-hmm. There's a bunch of questions in there. First of all, if you have someone that's severely autistic and is never going to be able to learn like the mainstream population, maybe you need to stop trying to educate someone that's that autistic the same way you would a standard kid in class, number one. But that being said, is why aren't the parents and the public down at the schools, down writing their elected officials, why aren't we participating in government? My overall theme. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is you can share all of that with me on the air. And I've heard you on other programs talk about autism and everything, okay? But the problem is to the extent that you can get your community members to align behind you and start to interact with your government on that, there will be vaccines in place.
Okay. States rubber stamp all these vaccines that are recommended by the FDA and the NIH. People don't know the long-term reactions of these vaccines. You cannot sue these vaccine companies. The government has given them retroactive immunity.
Well, it sounds like your elected officials then aren't doing their job.
If the elected
official is not acting in the best interest of the public, then you've got a problem, and I'm back to exactly what I said, is how can we have a government that's not responsive to us? And unfortunately, I'm not going to, can't do the whole show on that, but I appreciate your input. Thanks so much for the call.
Yeah.
Larry, you're on the air. Larry, hello.
Hi, Vernon.
Yes.
Hi. When you're talking about, why the public schools are so bad, why they're, turning out children that can't read, that are not educated, that aren't ready for life. It's not because of lack of money. It's because that's what they're supposed to do. Public schools are, that's what they're for. They're for not educating our children, but actually preventing them from being educated. That's why children aren't allowed to stay home with their parents, because often parents teach their children. In fact, that's why they even have homework, is to keep the child busy not learning at home, because the parent could use that time in the evening to teach a child, you know, even though they spent all day at school not learning, they could teach a child at home. But the whole idea of public education and this paradigm is somewhat crept into private school.
Oops, Larry, I don't know why he's on a cell. I lost Larry. It's interesting. I was listening to Larry. I keep going back to this article on researchers say money alone can't fix schools. There's an interesting thing going on about this thing. I pulled up a web page that I put on the internet when they had the last Measure B. It's called stop-em.us. And you can go there. I've got some statistics and some links to educational spending and some things in the state. So it's www.stop-em.us, and which stands for Stop Those Oppressive Politicians Extorting Money. And what's interesting about that, I have some per student spending trends on there. And I just noticed it in contrast to this article here where all of a sudden they're saying that we may need to increase our educational spending by 40% or more. This is the question I have for you. When I read articles, certain things come to my mind. Something's wrong and something's amiss here, folks. Because if you go back and you look in the 90s, you look at state spending on education in the 90s, we were spending roughly in the range in the Santa Cruz City School District anyway, and I could go through all the districts throughout the state and probably find it. We're spending $3,500 to about $4,500 per student. $3,500 to $4,500 per student. We're going to go to a break here in a second, but I want to get this out there for you to think about. Now, that's from 1992 to about 1995, 96. No one said and that was complaining that we weren't educating kids in those days. You didn't hear that as a complaint. From about 1996 to 1996-97 through about 2000-2001, educational funding skyrocketed. People were complaining they didn't have enough money. And now, all of a sudden, we've actually more than doubled educational spending in less than 10 years, and now they're saying that we need to dump a lot more into it. What's going on there? There's something amiss. 479-1080, fax me at 475-2967. Time for a commercial break.
Hi, this is Judy DeVilbiss. Listen to this name. Gardenia Glimmer Shea Body Soufflé. Ooh, that sounds good enough to eat, doesn't it? But, you know what? It isn't good enough to eat. I mean, I don't know. I haven't tasted it. However, it is a great body lotion, and it's from the Youngevity Company. It has a nice, soft gardenia scent. If you like gardenias, this is it. And it's a wonderful moisturizer. You rub it on, and the highlight, too, it actually glimmers. It has a little bit of a shine to it. I absolutely love it, and I use it all the time. It's just so lovely. Anyway, why don't you give it a shot? Youngevity has some wonderful products, and this is one of the new ones. So if you'd like to get started with the Youngevity products and check out the Gardenia Glimmer, why don't you call 888-352-7500. That's 888-352-7500. Shea Butter Glimmer to you. Goodbye.
Hey, Dave Allen here. I know. You heard me for years talking about Doc Wallace, wonderful supplements. I want to thank each and every one of you for going down, stopping by, saying hi, and leaving with the goods in your hand. Bay Bryant Shop, downtown Soquel, corner Dobbins, Soquel Drive, 462-1965. If you're in San Jose, Marilyn Henderson, 408-262-1888. If you're in Aptos, White Law Chiropractic Wellness Center, next to the Taco Bell, 688-7077. Oh, on the web, vitamingoddess.com. Once again, vitamingoddess.com. That's right, check it out. And go by, say hi, tell them Dave Allen sent you, and may you live long and prosper.
That was an abrupt ending.
It was pretty abrupt.
You know, that's probably because, you know, it's a nasty, ugly day outside so far. The sun has not popped out yet. A little bit gloomy out there, folks. But you know what? It's still a beautiful El Nino kind of day here. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed, on the Saturday special. And right now we're talking, actually started the show for you that just tuned in, with a little bit of a nostalgic look back at the 60s. You know, when unemployment was down at 5.5%, it's actually lower than that right now. I think it's in the 4%. The national debt was only $286 billion. The average salary was $4,743. You know, that's about half minimum wage, you know. The teacher salaries were $5,000 a year. Minimum wage was $1. The first class stamp was 4 cents. A gallon of gas was 31 cents. Whoa, that sure has jumped. Buy a McDonald's hamburger for 15 cents. Popcorn in the movie was 20 cents and a soda was 10. And we contrasted that to another piece I had going here, and it was researchers say money alone can't fix ailing schools. And here we have a state where we spend tons of money on education already, and boom, we're hit with this article here that says that educational spending may need to increase by 56% more than the state now spends. Well, you know what? If it increases by 56% more than what the state now spends, what's interesting about that, what that really means, can you tell me, Dave?
No, I cannot, Vernon. That's why you're the host and I'm sitting over here.
You know what that means is if it's got to increase by 50%, about around 56%, folks, when you read stuff, there's a wealth of information you typically don't see that you have to extract. But if we have to increase our educational spending by 56% more than what we're currently spending, and we're in a state that now currently spends approximately 50% of its budget on education, it means we have to spend everything we're currently spending in the state on education and nothing else. Now, that's interesting. If it takes that much to educate kids, then I think we're in deep trouble. Chuck in Monterey, you're on the air. Chuck?
Yes.
Yes.
Good morning, Vernon.
Hello.
I'd like to suggest to you that part of the problem is the GHSPPA, and that's an acronym for Grade and High School Teachers Protective Association, or the union.
This is an overlying, this keeps coming up today, that people seem to think the major problem with the cost of education are the unions. So go on, tell me more about that.
Well, in the old days, and my old days are just a little bit older than yours, teachers taught because that was their calling, that was what they were interested in doing, and they thought they could make a contribution. Now, teachers are, some of them are just like that. Others are, hey, it's a steady job, and they can't get rid of me. And unfortunately, I think they may be the majority.
Well, that's interesting you bring that up, because this seemed to have been the week for pieces on education in the paper. In the Thursday issue of the Sentinel, it says here, battle looms on school reform, lawmakers urge firing bad teachers.
Maybe exactly, exactly. How can somebody set the example for a group of kids if they're less than desirable themselves?
Well, the thing is, we need to do, fact of the matter is, if you're a little bit older than me, you're farther down this parade called life than I am, and you and I are headed out, right, Chuck?
That's right.
You know, there's
we're
the
not, we're not going to school anymore, that's for sure, except the school of hard knocks.
That's right. You know, we've done our things. We've made our success whatever we can. Chuck, you want to hold through the top of the hour break, or...
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. Folks, we've come to the end of the first hour on the Saturday special. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cube. We will be right back with you after some news and continue this discussion.
Following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
Let's put politics on the back burner and just talk about some interesting trivia. For your information, those of you who just thought you knew everything, here's a refresher course. The liquid inside young coconuts can be used as a substitute for blood plasma. No piece of paper can be folded in half more than 7 times. Donkeys kill more people annually than plane crashes. You burn more calories sleeping than you do watching television. Oak trees do not produce acorns until they're 50 years of age or older. The first product to have a barcode was Wrigley's gum. The King of Hearts is the only king without a mustache. American Airlines saved $40,000 in 1987 by eliminating one olive from each salad served in first class. Venus is the only planet that rotates clockwise. Since Venus is normally associated with women, what does that tell you? Apples, not caffeine, are more efficient in waking you up in the morning. Most dust particles in your house are made from dead skin. The first owner of the Marlboro Company died of lung cancer. So did the first Marlboro man. Walt Disney was afraid of mice. Pearls melt in vinegar. The three most valuable brand names on Earth are Marlboro, Coca-Cola, and Budweiser, in that order. It's possible to lead a cow upstairs, but not downstairs. A duck's quack doesn't echo, and no one knows why. Dentists have recommended that a toothbrush be kept at least 6 feet away from a toilet to avoid airborne particles resulting from the flush. Richard Milhouse Nixon was the first U.S. president whose name contains all the letters from the word criminal. the second president, William Jefferson Clinton. Please don't tell me you're surprised. And the best for last, turtles can breathe through their butts. I know some people like that, don't you? Now you know everything there is to know of importance. Cheers. And I'm going to wind this up with a powerful truism. In World War II, there was an advisor to Churchill who organized a group of people who dropped what they were doing every night at a prescribed hour for 1 minute to collectively pray for the safety of England, its people, and peace. This had an amazing effect as bombing stopped. There's now a group of people organizing the same thing here in America. If you would like to participate, each evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific, and 4 p.m. Hawaiian, stop whatever you're doing and spend 1 minute praying for the safety of the United States, our troops, our citizens, peace in the world, and for a godly nation. If you know anyone who would like to participate, please pass this along. Someone said, if people really understood the full extent of the power we have available through prayer, we might be speechless. Our prayers are the most powerful asset we have. Thank you, and God bless America. And thank you, Judy DeVilbiss. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
Good afternoon, everyone. You are tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, March 17th, 2007. Today, you can expect areas of dense morning fog. It should burn off by the afternoon with highs reaching near 71 degrees. Wind should be west at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight will be fair to partly cloudy, along with areas of dense fog. Lows should be around 45 degrees. Tomorrow will be pretty much the same thing as today. Highs should be around 70 degrees, and tomorrow night partly cloudy with lows around 48 degrees. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for this evening, west winds 5 to 15 knots, wind waves 1 to 3 feet, and a mixed swell west 2 to 5 feet at 10 seconds, and south 2 feet at 13 seconds, along with patchy fog. Coming up next, hour number 2 of the Saturday special, filling in for MZ, Vernon, Vernon, Vernon.
Yes, folks, we do have the inside track.
A nice nostalgic tune, huh?
Yes, we hear it every Saturday.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO.
Okay, folks, back for the second hour of the Saturday special. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, 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 a.k.a. V-Cube. I'm going to get back to the lines here real quick, but I wanted to throw something out there. As I was leaving this morning, I told my wife, I kind of wanted to do a piece that I would entitle is What's Wrong With Us? What's wrong with you and I? And what I meant by that is that here we are on the air, and we're interacting, and we're grappling with, and we're discussing a social issue right now. What's wrong with education? And we're talking about, I just brought up a study here that says that money alone can't fix schools. That's the headline, but the whole context of the article, the content of the article so far, seems to say we need to spend more money on it. And to that extent, I need to correct something. I said that if we increase our spending by 56% more, that's 56% of the school spending, so it would not be the whole budget. It would just take up about 75% of our school budget. But I'm thinking, here I've got an intelligent listening audience that I'm interacting with, and this was the whole point. And obviously, we are not very effectual and effective at getting done what we need to, because we have people up in our legislators windbagging, talking about this stuff, and it's not happening. And the fact of the matter is if we spend 75% of our money on education, those things that we took money from, actually it needs to increase by that. We're right now at about $125 billion we're spending, $130 billion in the state of California. Actually, it's jumped that $32 billion in just 2 years.
A lot of information out and a lot of controversy about the test for the kids to take to get out of high school, which, by the way, if they can't pass a test that's geared to sophomore year, it raises more questions.
And how about grade school year in math?
Yeah.
Because they got to pass middle school math. Which is grade school, really.
And maybe we need to have a few exams for teachers before they get their job.
I don't have any problem with that in higher standards. Thanks so much, Chuck. Got to move on here.
One more quickie.
Yes.
When I was a kid, I was an Army brat. We moved every three years. Never had a problem with school. Only one place that we went did I skip a grade. You want to guess which state that was?
California.
Right. And I came from Georgia.
Chuck, thanks for the call.
Nothing's changed.
It's gotten worse, maybe. That is a change.
Well, you're right.
Thanks so much, Chuck.
Okay.
479-1080, folks. Go to Mike next. He's online there, folks. You're listening to the Saturday special. Our telephone number is 479-1080. Fax is 475-2967. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, Vern.
How are you doing today?
All right. Great show. You know, if you've got cancer, there's one thing you don't want in your diet. You know what that is? Sugar.
Okay.
You're going to feed the cancer and it's going to grow like crazy. Well, if you have public education in the United States, there's one thing you don't want to feed it. That's money. It's a cancer, Vern. We need to just get rid of it. We need to cut it out.
How do we deal with it?
Al? Cut off the money, just like the sugar.
You know, Mike, I've been fascinated
Cut it all off.
You know, you look at the evolution of the country, and I haven't done a thing on the history of public schools, but one of the things I'm always intrigued by, I always used to ask people, who taught Newton physics, right? Or who taught Einstein relativity, because these people kind of created it, right?
Well, that was long before the NEA existed.
Okay, you're way ahead of me.
The NEA, if I got my story straight, it's not too hard to put the pieces together. Their big deal back in the mid-1800s, their big thing was 3% illiteracy rate amongst the children, and therefore we needed public government education. Now what do we have? 50%. We have this thing called functional illiteracy, where basically what they're doing is teaching people how to read enough to get by,
and
pay your bills and write your checks and stop at a stop sign, and you can find McDonald's. No, you don't need to read to find that.
And Mike, I had that other article I brought up in the first hour. And to boot, what they want to do is rewrite the No Child Left Behind education standards so they can say more people are passing only because they've lowered the standards. Now, that is a brilliant solution to the problem.
Yeah. Well, public education is the single largest negative influence in our country. They go around pointing their fingers at parents, okay?
Yes.
TV, drugs. Well, there's one common denominator amongst all these things, and that's public education.
Well,
parents these days are having a hard time being parents. One major reason for that is they went through public education. they got their values clarified in their values clarification programs. That is, if any parent wants to find out the one, if they want to look for one single problem area in school, you go in your classroom, in your kid's classroom.
They might throw you out, Mike. Yeah. They might throw you out if you show up the classroom.
I've been thrown out. And you look on your teacher's shelves for this one book called Values Clarification, and you steal that thing, and you take it home, and you look for how it teaches your kid prostitution.
Or you could probably, if you're a good citizen, go out and buy a copy for yourself so you wouldn't have
to steal it. Steal it.
Mike, thanks so much for the call. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. 479-1080, fax me at 475-2967, folks. John and Milpitas, you're on. You're on the air. It's your mic.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
How's your day doing so far?
Mine's doing good. I got a little bit of an echo. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been listening to the radio about education. And I've been going to the Seneca site and all that stuff. And Camboyo, too.
Okay, you go to Cabrillo?
I used to.
Yes, and did you learn anything there?
Yeah. But I don't go to school no more. I graduated.
Okay, you graduated from high school or college?
High school in 97.
So you've been graduated for about 10 years now.
Yeah.
Did you learn enough in school to get a good job?
Yeah, I have a job now.
Is it a good one?
I work at the MITC, day program for the adults.
I'm having a real hard time hearing you, John, because of the echo. So, you know, if I hesitate, I might have to cut you here soon. Can you get a landline and call me back?
Yeah, I'll call you back later.
Okay, thank you so much. 479-1080, folks. Fax me at 475-2967. Krishna, you're on the air.
Hi there, Vernon.
How are you today?
It could be brighter here.
I agree. You mean in terms of sunshine or in terms of education?
It looks as gray as the day is today. But, Vernon, you know, I think that unless there is a sea change in societal values, our school is just going to keep degrading, because I think there is a conspiracy, frankly. And the conspiracy is of the silent majority of mothers who work outside their homes. They are just shoving their kids like trash into public schools to be babysat instead of being taught. I used to blame teachers a lot, but I think it's the parents. I don't have the statistics, Vernon. You're good at this, to find out how many women in this country or maybe in the state work outside the home and don't socialize their kids, fill them up and spoil them because they feel guilty that they don't, and the teachers are the ones who are doing them. And when government wants to socialize people, this is what happens. And the social promotion, instead of taking exams and passing each grade, parents are all for it. You know, the moment you stop promoting these kids who are not passing their grades, and the parents have to deal with it, and you just stick to it, there is no compromise. You will see these women waking up.
Well, you know, Krishna, have you listened to the whole show?
I listened to it spottily.
Okay. I had a little piece about the 60s in the beginning, right?
Right.
I don't know if you remember. I brought it. Doesn't matter. But in the 60s, one of the pieces that was out there is our SAT scores were higher. We had to diagram sentences, and we memorized the Gettysburg Address. Many had to repeat a grade in school because we couldn't cut it. If you flunked PE, you could be denied your high school diploma. And now people are arguing, well, just because they can't pass the test is no reason to not give them a diploma. They'll feel bad about themselves. That's just what I want. I want a doctor to operate on me that, you know, I need to feel sorry for him because he couldn't pass his boards.
And this is what feminism has gotten you. You have communism and socialism and which is nothing but unionism, and you have government programs all emanating from one source. Mothers are absent.
Well, I certainly wouldn't disagree with that, but let me ask you one thing. My mother was a working mother. I would have been considered, in today's age, a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
Because both my parents worked. That being said, my parents took an active part in my education. They helped me with homework. We had rules when I got home from school, because in those days you get a new set of clothes in the fall for the fall season. Mm-hmm. You were required to change into your last year's clothes before you went out and played.
Yeah.
And we could run free, which you can't do today. So that I don't know that a mother can't work. I think that parents can effectively still deal with their children.
Well, I don't think so, because if in a neighborhood 10 homes where 8 mothers are absent, the whole atmosphere changes. If you were a latchkey kid, but 3 of your friends' parents, mothers were not, you see, the pressure is there for certain social norms.
You know, by the way, yeah, that's an excellent point. There's something else that I hadn't thought about I want to throw in the mix, is technology's changed things today. And with all the cell phones, the instant messaging, and the computers,
yeah,
children have the ability to put together a network of communication that they couldn't when I was growing up.
But even then, values shouldn't change.
No, I agree.
Central values have changed because parents are not there. You know, people who can afford to stay home, where either the father stays home or the mother stays home, somebody's taking care of the kid and teaching him from right from wrong and self-discipline. But when both parents are gone, and then they come home and feel guilty and give their kids, let their kids run wild because they're feeling guilt, love. And this
we don't have parents anymore is what I really hear you saying.
Pardon me?
I really hear you saying at the heart of what you're saying, we don't have parents in parenting anymore.
We do not. We do not. And they're guilty. They feel that. Thank God they feel bad and ashamed. And then you have people saying, oh, stressed parents. You know, I lived in a neighborhood where I was one of the rare mothers that stayed home. Now, I'm not boasting. My kids didn't turn out to be hot shots either. But at least I gave them certain values which they still have. If they don't go by it, they feel wretched and ashamed.
Well, and the upside, the thing about that, Krishna, is that at least you've done your job, and now they have to deal with their own lives as they do.
And
you can have a clean conscience that you did everything you could as a good parent to raise them.
And you know what, Vernon?
What?
I didn't have Cuisinart. I didn't go on vacations. I told my kids, if you see anything on TV, you're not getting it. I went to the flea market and bought them clothes and shoes. That's how I raised them, because there was one person earning. And we were happy, and I felt proud. But you know what? The whole time, I was going against the grain. The whole time, every step of the way.
Well, Krishna, what you just told me is you may set priorities in what was important
exactly
and how you spent
right.
your, in what was important to you in life, and I appreciate that. Listen,
my children didn't grow up hoodlums, which a lot of these kids are. I saw them in school.
Thanks so much for the call.
You're welcome, honey.
Bye-bye. 479-1080, folks. You can fax me at 475-2967. John, thanks for your patience.
Hey, how you doing, Triple V? Good to talk to you. Just a couple points I'd like to bring up. Number one, you ought to see what the retirement and the health benefits cost for these people are going to be in the next 5 to 10 years. Unbelievable. Next thing is, they're not productive. We've got these schools, and they're not, the amount of hours they're used per week is minimal. You gotta go to a 12-month thing. The next thing is the way they're teaching is the way they taught 150 years ago. You gotta get into the high-tech stuff, the modular stuff where kids can plug into it, and they're seen if they're done these programs, they're monitored, they're questioned, they're answered. This way they'll learn how to read. Not all the classes that way. And the other thing is that we'll free this up and get high-tech into the education system is a CHIT system.
Well, you know, John, let me interrupt here because you put some good stuff out there. One of the things that I think that really needs to be done is kids need, and the parents need to do that, is that the kids need to know that whether they like education or not, it's part of the learning process. You know, like the mother eagle teaches her eaglets how to fly, whatever, you know. The mother lioness teaches their cubs how to hunt. These kids are going to grow up. Okay. And they need to go out in the world, and it's in what I don't care what they want or don't want as kids. There's certain skills we need to impart to them, and they get that through the educational system. That being said, if they want us to just babysit kids in school. Then let's set aside a whole nother section and just hire people to be babysitters and watch them and not spend all this money on them.
What's that saying? Go to prison, learn how to read, and get a college education?
By the way, since you bring that up, have you ever watched the program called, I think it's not Prison Break. That's a different one. Lockup.
MSNBC, yes.
Do you ever watch Lockup?
Yeah, I watch it once in a while. It's disgusting. I would have those people out there working, earning a living, and I'd make it where they'd be like the guy in, was it Arizona, that has them wearing pink underwear and where you labor, and you don't want to go back to that place.
That's what they said on the one head last night. The warden says is we don't want people to like this place. We want them to, in fact, not like this place and not ever want to come back here.
And another thing that's wrecked the California school system that nobody talks about is the teachers refused to find out if these people had citizenship or their parents had citizenship. And if their parents didn't have citizenship and weren't legal, they didn't get into school.
Boy, you're in an uphill battle on that one, but I agree with you. John, thanks so much for the call.
The best talking to you, Triple V. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 479-1080, folks. You can fax me at 475-2967. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed, in for MZ on the Saturday special. We're kind of discussing education. I started off my show and said, well, some interesting articles in the paper that lawmakers want to rewrite, No Child Left Behind, lowering the education standards, and then I throw out there for you, the researchers say money alone can't fix ailing schools. We've been talking about education in this culture and where it's going and what we need to do, and I'm interested in your input because, actually, by the way, there's an upside to all this, folks. I always tease people and say the upside about an uneducated populace is, in fact, that these kids will grow up and they'll get college educations that don't matter. And when I'm in the nursing home, they're going to be the ones taking care of me. They'll get a tart old man there when I'm in there. I'll ask him a lot of questions. By the way, I was in one of the local electronics stores here probably about 6-8 months back. I got a kick out of this. I don't know how much of you know much about electronics, but I sat there and I listened to this kid tell someone that they in fact needed to buy the new 2300 megahertz rechargeable batteries for their camera. Now, my background was in physical chemistry and I'm listening to this guy talk. And so when he was done, I walked up to him, I says, can you please tell me about the 2300 megahertz rechargeable batteries? He's going on and on. I says, well, I've never heard of a megahertz battery. I've heard of 2300 milliamp batteries. And that's interesting to me from a standpoint because I grew up in a place and time where when you went to work someplace, you knew something about the product. And if you didn't, you got someone that did know something about the product. And they could tell the customer the exact answer they needed to know. People are making stuff up these days, folks. People in the education, young people get out there in the educational system and they make things up. And I think that's fascinating to me. Here are kids talking to people selling electronics, people expecting him to have the answers regarding the products. And he's just making it up just to sell stuff. 479-1080. You can fax me at 475-2967. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed, on the Saturday special in for MZ. I don't know where my, I'll go ahead. I've got the power to do this. My call screener is indisposed for a second. Who am I speaking with?
Hello?
Yes?
It sounds like a lot of people that don't have kids in school complain. Oh, by the way, this is Mike. It sounds like a lot of people that don't have kids in school complaining about how bad the educational system is. And I'm no fan of the educational system per se in its current form, but my kids are going through the public education system right now and they're getting a good education. Their teachers are all good. This is in this county. All of their peers are graduating, getting decent grades. There is a subgroup of kids out there that aren't doing very well, and there's other schools for them to go to. Generally by the second year of high school, they've been weeded out. And it seems to me that the process that I'm
witnessing that my two teenage sons are involved in is a functioning working system.
Let me ask, you said your name was Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, let me ask you a question. Do you actively participate in your children's education?
Well, we do, yes. And most of my kids' friends' parents do as well.
You know, because clearly one of the things that I would agree with you 100% on is at the heart of it is, you know, I don't care. You can have a bad school. If you have parents that participate in their kids' education and work with them and are concerned, those kids are going to turn out fine. Really, really. At the heart of it, I think the heart of this whole issue is parents involved and or not involved. As evidence for problems with schools, though, is how do you explain the increased remediation taking place in our colleges?
Yeah, I can't explain that. I don't know. I can only speak for what I'm seeing. And I just wanted to weigh in just a little bit on some of your previous callers, just to be a little bit more open-minded about some of these articles that they see in the newspaper, because quite frankly, what I'm seeing isn't as bleak as editorial opinion there is painting it out to be.
Well, let me ask you a question. When Congress, though, wants to lower the standards for the program called No Child Left Behind, don't you think that's a problem?
I'm a fan of No Child Left Behind.
Huh?
I'm a fan of No Child Left Behind. I think it's a good program. I think it's working.
That wasn't the question, though. As I asked you, do you think that they should lower the standards for the program?
No, I don't think so.
Or should you ask for children to aspire to the highest level possible?
Absolutely.
And see,
I agree on that.
That's my listen, I didn't say that I was against No Child Left Behind. What I said is there's this piece in the paper that Congress wants to rewrite the laws for No Child Left Behind because school administrators have complained that, you know, that they have annual deadlines they can't meet, and school officials have rebelled against requirements that students with limited English or other learning disabilities perform as well as their grade level peers. And I say that if you get out of school at 12th grade, that you should be able to perform at a 12th grade level. That's all. I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation for a society when it educates its people.
It's absolutely not. And that's the least we should expect.
You know, and it's troubling to me when people complain that it's unreasonable to expect kids to pass the current exit exams when they've known that the exams were coming for the last 3 or 4 years, and they're requiring kids out of high school to perform at a 10th grade level in English and an 8th grade level at math. I mean,
may I comment on that? My kids laugh at that. They can't believe that there are children in their high school that or kids in their high school that can't pass that test. They said the first year of high school that's basic information.
Mike, I really appreciate a reasoned call, and you're absolutely right. It's not all that.
Make one other comment.
Bert? Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Where's the trade schools? We need trade schools. You and I are both you used to be in construction. We've met on job sites before. I went to a trade school. There should be trade schools out there for these kids to go to instead of these secondary high schools where they're getting poor education. These kids should be getting GEDs and going into trade schools. And instead of seeing all these guys standing in front of San Lorenzo Lumber looking for work, we should be putting these kids to work.
Mike,
they want to work, and they got bright minds.
I couldn't agree more. You know, the fact of the matter is not every kid wants to go to college. Not every kid cares about college, nor should every kid be in college. In a functioning society, every job is important.
It really is. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate the call. 479-1080, folks. Don.
Yeah, listen, I only have a minute. I'm in the car driving, but you can't proceed with your show without bringing up the subject of school choice and school vouchers and introducing competition. That's essentially at the heart of what's going on. Parents can't afford, without a voucher, without school choice provision supported by the state, to send their kids, most of them, to private schools of whatever sect, religious focus, or whatever agenda that school might have. You don't have a choice to send your child if you can't afford it. You've got to talk about school choice and competition.
You know, I certainly would agree. As the schools need to be competitive, and when this whole voucher system comes up, Don, am I losing you?
I hang it up.
Don, you're welcome to call back. I'm losing you on you just lost you. Don brings up the question of competition in schools. And I've always been amazed at people that have been against the voucher systems, because it seems to me that our public schools have a head start on resources and everything else, and they should welcome the opportunity to show the rest of the schools that want to go out there that they're going to have an uphill battle fighting and competing with them. John, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, sir.
Yes.
I was listening about the education of Syracuse. I was in Syracuse High before in 97, and I graduated from math, reading, and science, and I passed all that stuff.
So you got a good education in the public school system?
Yes, sir.
And you're happy with did you go on to college? I think that you called earlier on your cell phone. You were echoey. And I think you said you went to Cabrillo.
Yeah, I went to Cabrillo College before. And I passed math, reading, and all that stuff, too.
Well, you know, I think that it's the possibility of a good education is out there for anyone that wants to learn and apply themselves, and it sounds like that's what you did, John.
Yeah.
And so basically you're saying it's up to the person, it's out there if you want it, and if you apply yourself, you can get it. Am I following you?
Yeah.
I appreciate that call, and I'm glad that I was able to hear you better this time, okay?
Thanks, sir. Have a great weekend.
Same to you. Bye-bye. 479-1080, folks. Fax me at 475-2967. We've been discussing the state of education in this great United States, probably more so in California, because I brought up some newspaper articles in the paper. One says that they want to relax the standards on No Child Left Behind, for one. And the second one is researchers say money alone can't fix ailing schools. I want to see what Liberty has to say about that. Liberty, you're on the air.
Good morning, Vernon.
Good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to put in a little plug for the Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Did you read?
By the way, it's my sister's birthday, and so sister out there, in the event you want to remain anonymous, I won't say your name, happy birthday to you. And even though you're probably not listening right now, at least I have it on record. I can send you the clip. Happy birthday to my youngest sister, who now has three of her own.
And it was my late mother's birthday, which is probably the main big reason why I got into St. Patrick's Day. Maybe not the... But anyway, did you ever read a book called How the Irish Saved Civilization?
No.
Well, excellent little book, and it points out the fact that during the Dark Ages, the Irish were probably the best educated people, and, well, they don't like to refer to themselves as being European, but the Irish, because they were on the outskirts of civilization, were actually instrumental in preserving the classics. And the Irish were bilingual. They spoke Latin fluently, as well as their own Gaelic language. And also, I believe, were educated in Greek. And their students were educated outdoors on a hillside using slate and chalk to write with. And they were the best educated people at the time.
Liberty, I want to actually grapple with you on that one, too, because it's one of the things on slates and chalk. And we hear these dismal stories, teachers got to buy pencils and papers and stuff like that, and the cost of education is so high. What kind of materials and resources does it really take that are that expensive to teach a first, second, third year old grader, not year olds, but first, second, and third graders how to read, write, and do arithmetic?
Well, it doesn't take that much, and previous callers have pointed it out that, just an incredible amount. It seems like no matter how much money you throw at education, it's not enough. And one of the things that jerks my chain is, you remember when they were passing the California lottery, how all this money was going to go to education?
Yes.
What happened to it? How much of the money that people pay to buy lottery tickets actually goes toward education. That's a rhetorical question.
No, I think much less than people expected or was supposed to. But by the same token, there again, as I am boggled as to why now in 2007 that the and this is just general fund money in the school district, the total amount of the expenditures are about $12,000. But if you were to look in the Santa Cruz City School District, we're spending around $8,000 per student 10 years later. We're, you know, almost double what we did 10 years ago. And they weren't complaining 10 years ago, but now it's not enough.
I would like to put in a plug for the San Lorenzo Valley schools where my daughter matriculated. And she graduated a straight-A student, except the year she was in a car accident and she got a B, which really bummed her out. But otherwise, she's a straight-A student. And she brought her homework home with her, and I stopped trying to help her with math in about the sixth grade. Because after she got into junior high and high school, I mean, they were teaching calculus and trig. And,
but, you know, I'll bet you supported her.
Oh, yes.
You know, whether you could do it or not, you could be a cheerleader back there, and kids can understand that.
Oh, definitely. And I read the material she was bringing home, and I don't know what she was being taught in class because I couldn't sit in on the classes. But from what I saw of the material she was bringing home and the level of her education, she's in Lewis and Clark up in Portland now, doing great. Not having any problems understanding the material. So I give a big couple of thumbs up to the San Lorenzo Valley High School District.
Well, I think that's great. And so not all is lost, but there are aspects that are dismal when people say we need more money for education and when our legislators want to lower standards so that people can appear to be succeeding when they're just being required to produce less. Liberty, thanks for the call.
Adingabra.
Bye-bye. 479-1080, folks. Fax me at 475-2967. Rory, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Brennan.
Good morning.
I'm a little late to the discussion, but I picked up on the
point. At least you showed up.
Point. Yeah, it's interesting. I do want to say to Liberty, though, I think that how the Irish saved Western civilization is sprinkled with a little of the Irish baloney. You know what I mean? And I'm part Irish.
Well, you know, Rory,
good talkers.
There's a joke. There's a joke going around. I got it probably a couple years ago about the Irish that they call up and they threaten. I can't remember what the government is. They have these horrendous demands. The very final point in the thing is, and it's a country that, you know, it would be like if Ireland threatened the United States. There's no way that they could probably possibly beat us in a military conflict. And they
right.
finally renege on their demands because they just don't have enough room to hold all the American POWs. send that anyone that's interested in that. I could post it. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's probably some truth to the fact that higher learning was maintained in Ireland during some of the periods. I haven't studied it closely lately, but during the Middle Ages and the unraveling of Western Civ in parts of Europe. But there were monasteries all over Europe, and higher education did continue. And it wasn't, the Irish did not say Western civilization. They were part of it, but they certainly didn't say it. But they did send missionaries out, so there's a spiritual aspect there that should not be overlooked. But what's interesting in this, and I'll give you a thumbnail of our experiences. You know, I have a number of kids, much to population Pat's chagrin. I don't know if you're listening, Pat, but we did end up with a total of 9.
Oh, you do have a good family.
Yeah, we're doing our best to keep the species going. But anyway, we homeschooled up to last year, and my wife homeschooled 8. And we've since put all of them except the 4-year-old in Catholic grammar in high school, and they're doing quite well. And there's all, you know, varying intellectual capacity amongst the kids, as you would expect.
Guy, Rory, you didn't know you had that many kids. I can almost picture your house right now being like a true little schoolhouse.
It was. And it,
8 of them sitting there with smiling faces watching your wife teach
them. Well, get this. What prompted the move to the grammar school was that the 5th grader caught up with the 7th grader, and they were doing their DVDs because we downloaded DVDs. There's just too many subjects, too many kids. So we were doing that, and it was successful. but my wife couldn't keep on top of them. They were butting heads. You can imagine the older boy and the younger sister doing the same curriculum, butting heads, fighting over the DVD. You know how it goes. So, anyway, they're doing very well. But the single common attribute that we hear back from their teachers now is they're all good readers and good spellers. And we did it on a shoestring budget. Okay. My wife's a product of Catholic education in the primary grades in high school. So she got a good foundation and she's smart, but it can be done. And, you know, we're spending on their current education, we're spending probably $3,500 a year. So a fraction of what the public schools are doing, and it's much more rigorous. There's no question about it. And I would put in a vote of confidence for the voucher program, because what's going to happen, in spite of what the teachers union is going to do to try to scare everybody, is that good teachers are going to be retained. All the school buildings will be used. It's just parents will be put back in the driver's seat where they need to be, directing their children's education, and get away from the state monopoly of these folks that are forcing all kinds of nonsense. I mean, just look at the homosexual agenda that's being forced on our kids.
Rory,
people don't talk about it. It's breathtaking what they're trying to do, and this is how the homosexuals are recruiting.
Social engineering. Rory, thanks so much for the call. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You have a good day now. 479-1080, folks. Fax me at 475-2967. I think now is a good time to do our commercial spots, Dave. Let's run those, and we'll come back and wrap this thing up. We only have 15 minutes left on the Saturday special here. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. I'll be right back with you.
Electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. Hello, I'm Priscilla Christie of Direct Electric.
And I'm Dave Christie. Whether your problem is a light switch, breaker box, meter main, or anything in between, Direct Electric technicians will fix it right the first time for the right price. And here's the best part. Direct Electric will not bill you for a service call.
I don't think they heard you, Dave. You better tell them again.
Okay. Direct Electric will not charge you for a service call.
And if you have an electrical emergency, call Direct Electric at 425-1407. I'll roust Dave and he'll come running.
Priscilla is right. If you have a real electrical emergency, the kind that just can't wait till morning, call Direct Electric and we will come running.
Remember, your electrical problem is no problem when you call Direct Electric. I will take your call.
And I will make certain that your problem gets fixed. Call Direct Electric at 425-1407. That's 425-1407.
Okay, let's get ready for kindergarten. Backpack?
Yep.
Jacket?
Yep.
Dental appointment?
Mommy, how's it going to help me get ready for school?
I want to make sure you don't have any cavities.
Hi, I'm Assemblymember John Laird, and like you, I believe your child's health is important. That's why the new dental checkup requirement for children entering kindergarten is important, so that all children can be ready to learn. Parents, get more information at CDA.org or call 800-CDA-SMILE.
Paid for by the California Dental Association.
Hi, it's Sophie. I just want to remind you that wherever you are during your busy day, you can always get your longevity supplements. So listen up. In SoCal, go to the Bay Briar Shop on the corner of SoCal Drive and Daubenbiss. Call them at 462-1965. That's 462-1965. In Aptos, don't forget Whitelaw Chiropractic and Wellness Center. They're on Soquel Avenue next to the Little Taco Bell. Their number is 688-7077, 688-7077. In the San Jose area, call Marilyn Henderson at 408-262-1888. That's 408-262-1888. And now, you can check out VitaminGoddess.com. That's VitaminGoddess.com. No excuses not to take care of yourself.
Hey, guys, I think it's about time we had a new promo for the morning show.
A new promo?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I like the one about the vegetables. What about something that we've already done before that we do a show that's full of fun and information?
Yeah, like the Jell-O snorting promo. That was a classic.
So how about then that we have a new jingle?
Okay, so let's sing an example.
Good, 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 good morning, Monterey. Good, good, good.
That's it. I've got you. Well, wait. We've got to keep doing this, though, guys.
Good, 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 good morning, Monterey. Good, good. I gotta go see if the paint's dry. Good, 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 good morning, Monterey. Good, good morning.
Okay, I gotta go. What? Sorry, the dog needs to go outside, and I gotta phone call.
You're just gonna leave me here on my own?
Yeah.
I guess it's just me then.
Yeah. Okay. Good, good, good.
Don't miss Good Morning Monterey Bay, Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 on AM 1080 KSCO.
Good, 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 good morning.
Blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on the red.
No, this just mellows me out. What a great song there. Well, folks, we got our last 12 minutes here on the Noon Balloon. My name is Vernon Bohr, not the Noon Balloon, Saturday Special. My name is Vernon Bohr, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-cubed in for MZ, who could not be in today. So he asked if I'd be willing to fill in for him, and I'm more than happy to do that because I enjoy chatting with you folks. We've been discussing education for most of the time. I actually thought earlier we might, in fact, take a nostalgic look at the 60s, but you've been more interested in education because, after all, the children are our future. And in the last segment, Rory brought up the possibility of vouchers. And it's interesting, when he did that, I pulled up an article here from Imprimis from Hillsdale College. And it's a piece that was done in 2004. And it has to do with New Zealand. And the title of the article was Rolling Back Government Lessons from New Zealand, 2004. And I think you'll find this piece interesting. It says, New Zealand had an education system that was failing as well. It was failing about 30% of its children, especially those in lower socioeconomic areas. We had put more and more money into education for 20 years and achieved worse and worse results. It cost us twice as much to get a poor result than we did 20 years previously with much less money. So we decided to rethink what we were doing here as well. The first thing we did was to identify where the dollars were going and that we were pouring into education. We hired international consultants because we didn't trust our own departments to do it. That's interesting, folks. It's the fox watching the chicken coop or something like that. And they reported that for every dollar we were spending on education, 70 cents were being swallowed up by administration. Once we heard this, we immediately eliminated all of the boards of education in the country. Every single school came under the control of a board of trustees elected by the parents of the children at the school, and by nobody else. We gave schools a block of money based on the number of students that went to them with no strings attached. At the same time, we told parents that they had an absolute right to choose where their children would go to school. It was as absolutely obnoxious to me that anyone would tell parents that they must send their children to a bad school. Listen to this, folks. We converted 4,500 schools to this new system all on the same day. But we went even further. We made it possible for privately owned schools to be funded in exactly the same way as publicly owned schools, giving parents the ability to spend their education dollars wherever they chose. Again, everybody predicted that there would be a major exodus of students from the public to private schools because the private schools showed an academic advantage of 14 to 15%. Haven't we heard that argument before? If we produce vouchers, we're going to lose the kids in the public schools. We're going to lose the money. It didn't happen, however, because the differential between schools disappeared in about 18 to 24 months. Why? Because all the student teachers realized that if they lost their students, they would lose their funding. And if they lost their funding, they would lose their jobs. 85% of our students went to the public schools at the beginning of the process. That fell to only 84% over the first year or so of our reforms. But 3 years later, 87% of the students were going to public schools. More importantly, we moved from being about 14 or 15% below our international peers to being about 14 or 15% above our international peers in terms of educational attainment. Whew. That's amazing to me. Here we have New Zealand. Recognize that it had a problem with its educational system. They're spending more and more money and getting less and less. It sounds a lot like us in California. We keep pouring more and more money into public education. We find that fewer and fewer kids are able to cut the mustard. We find people complaining and saying that it's too hard to pass exit exams that require English at a 10th grade level and mathematics at a 7th or 8th grade level. So the problem obviously has to be money. We have more remediation in our colleges. And by the way, in the remaining 8 minutes, if you want to weigh in on that, I think that's interesting. If someone comes into our college system and they need remediation, should they be charged extra for that? Remember, we educate virtually everyone in this society. Everyone gets to go to school, like it or not, from 1st to 12th grade. So when you go to college, if you haven't gotten the basics that you need, should the public come up with the money again and give you more money for the remediation, the courses you didn't get when you were in grade school, K through 12? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think if you failed to get the English that you needed to go on to college, and if you failed to get the math you needed and you couldn't perform, you should have to ante up for that. You can call it a failure in the educational system if you want, but why should the public have to continue to pour money into you? I feel the same way, by the way, about adult education for the most part, of which our current K through 12 budget has a certain chunk of money into there, is I think it's fine to have adult education. However, we all had our shot. You know, it's kind of like when you see something advertised and they have an introductory offer. The person that signs up usually gets some, you know, gets a little benefit, a little value. They give you a little something extra to get you in the door. But you don't get that ongoingly. It's a one-shot deal. So if, in fact, you didn't get your education in the public education system when you were there, should you, in fact, should we continue to pour money into you later to make up for the fact that you didn't learn? 479-1080, you can fax me at 475-2967. Fascinating. You know, what is the future? You know, I hear people talk about the children being the future, the children being our future, the children of the future of the country. And I hear people talk about the tremendous debt that we're going to leave them. Clearly, if we increase the amount of spending on education, as the one article said, people say that we need to spend 40-56% more on education. If that, in fact, is going to break us, have we done our children a service, both in terms of, A, the education we've provided them, if they don't have the skills they need to survive in the society, and if we leave them with the debt that is part of that increased spending? I don't think so. You know, and I think that action talks, and there's that old saying, action talks, BS walks. If you, in fact, you can talk all you want about caring about the children and the children being our future, but if you're not requiring the most and the best of them, and if you're not educating them well, and if they get through high school and grade school and they still need remediation, there's something wrong with that picture. Rich and Salinas, what do you have for me?
Hi, did New Zealand have huge teacher unions that would prohibit all this stuff?
No, they got rid of all that.
Well, see, that's the first thing we need to do. Then we can implement all those things, because they'll be fighting those things through the court forever.
You are chuckling because we are saddled with a problem that they just ignored. They just fired them all. By the way...
Hey, did you hear Kay's commentary?
I've heard all of them. Which one?
I learned more from Kay's commentary today than the other stuff. And I think what we ought to do, if that all fails, then we ought to go back to Plan B, which is what she said. We all pray at the same time for our school system.
Well, Maybe that will work. Maybe we need to pray, stand up, and do three 360s at the same time, and then go jump out in our cars and flash your lights three times. I don't know.
And I'm going back to the first subject. I can't wait for the good old days again.
Thanks so much, Rich. Appreciate that call. 479-1080. You can fax me at 475-2967. I like that. A light, jovial call here in our last 4 minutes. Another thing that New Zealand did, this is off the education, but this is absolutely fascinating. Great piece. You should read it. You can get it by going to hillsdale.edu, Imprimis. And it's 2004, the fourth month. It says, what about invasive government in the form of subsidies? First, we need to recognize the main problem with subsidies is they make people dependent. Guy, a tremendous amount of our expenditure in our government is subsidies, okay? And he gives us a great example. He says, let me give you an example. By 1984, New Zealand sheep farming was receiving about 44% of its income from government subsidies. Its major product was lamb, and lamb in the international marketplace was selling for about $12.50, with the government providing another $12.50 per carcass. Well, we did away with that. With all sheep farming subsidies within 1 year. And, of course, the sheep farmers were unhappy. Of course, you know, when you get your gravy train cut off, you're unhappy. But once they accepted the fact that the subsidies weren't coming back, they put together a team of people charged with figuring out how they could get $30 per lamb carcass. That's more than the $25 they're getting. The team reported back that this would be difficult but not impossible. It required producing an entirely different product, processing it a different way, and selling it in different markets. And within 2 years, by 1989, they had succeeded in converting their $12.50 product into something worth $30. By 1991, it was worth $42. By 1994, it's worth $74. And by 1999, it's worth $115. In other words, the New Zealand sheep industry went out into the marketplace and found people who would pay higher prices for its product. You can go into the best restaurants in the U.S. and New Zealand and buy New Zealand lamb, and you'll be paying somewhere between $35 and $60 per pound. Folks, I guess at the heart of it is we end this Saturday special here with just a, let's see, where's my clock? Just a minute or so to go, is what we find is that when government gets out of the business of being a nanny to people, then in fact, people are productive, whether it be in the educational system or something else. I'm flat out of time, folks. I got 40 seconds left. Thank you for your time, your attention. MZ should be back here with you next week. I will be back on the Noon Balloon next Friday. My show's from 12 to 1 on Fridays for any of you that haven't heard me before. And with that, my name's Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. Out of here for the Saturday special. Do we have our ending music, Rick?
This is KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey. It's 12 noon.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Carton. Iraqi insurgents unleash chlorine gas in their latest attacks.
They're crude chemical weapons. Three trucks carrying containers of chlorine gas rigged with explosives. They blow up, poisoning crowds of people near the cities of Fallujah and Ramadi. Several U.S. troops are among those poisoned.
Fox News Radio's Alistair Wanklin. 350 Iraqi civilians and six U.S. troops are being treated for exposure. The Palestinian parliament overwhelmingly approving a Hamas-Fatah coalition government. Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh says it will seek to expand a truce with Israel. However, Israel has said it will not deal with the new government. In his weekly radio address, President Bush accusing Democrats of using U.S. troops to win political battles at home.
If American forces were to step back from Baghdad before it is more secure, the scale and scope of attacks would increase and intensify. A contagion of violence could spill out across the entire country, and in time, this violence would engulf the region.
Democrats, in their response, say the nation needs a new direction in Iraq.
Our troops in battle deserve proper armor and a strategy that will help them complete the mission. This is what Democrats are working to deliver in Congress.
Senator Patty Murray of Washington. Demonstrators and supporters of U.S. policy in Iraq shouting at each other today in Washington.
We have a right to go in here.
We're not going to let you.
It's our wall.
We want that wall.
The protesters are marching from the National Mall to the Pentagon to denounce the war.
Even though this is a free country and they're supposed to be patriots and love America, but we're not allowed to exercise our right to free speech, our right to free assembly, and our right to free expression.
The fourth anniversary of the invasion comes next week, and at least 8 deaths blamed on the winter storm that has slammed the Northeast this weekend. Hundreds of flights have been canceled all across the country. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Nothing inspires imagination like reading. When you open a book, you can explore new worlds, like the ones in the Chronicles of Narnia.
It's a beaver.
I ain't gonna smell it, if that's what you want.
Talking beaver. Impossible.
You can make new friends, discover amazing adventures, and most of all, have fun.
Are you prepared for what awaits you?
To find out more about the wonders of reading, you can visit the Library of Congress website at www.loc.gov. There, you can learn more about books, play fun games, discover cool facts, and so much more. You can log on to www.loc.gov and let your journey begin. This message has been brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Will Iran's president be welcomed with open arms? The Iranian leader wants to take a trip to New York with a goal in mind.
Don't expect New Yorkers to roll out the red carpet, but the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, could be in the Big Apple as soon as next week. The purpose of this trip is to address the UN Security Council, which is expected to vote on a new resolution calling for more sanctions if Iran does not halt its nuclear program.
Fox's David Lee Miller in New York. The world's largest retailer did have plans to branch out into the financial arena. Fox News Radio's Dave Anthony tells us about their final decision on the matter.
Walmart is making a withdrawal, bagging its plans to expand into banking, which the FDIC's chairman calls a wise choice. The retail giant's proposed loan corporation drew criticism from banks, unions, consumer groups, and some in Congress. Though Walmart says it never planned to open branches and get into traditional banking, instead it says the plan was to just create an operation for processing credit cards and other payments to cut transaction costs. Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
A quick-thinking teenager in Florida leading a would-be kidnapper right to her doorstep turned out to be a good idea.
She's 16 years old, driving to her brother's house in Charlotte County when a man runs up to her car, jumps inside, and shoves a gun at her, demanding money. That girl, Felicia Bolt Charles, convinces him the money's at her house, so they go there at gunpoint and burst through the door. Felicia's dad, Joseph Charles, reading the paper, he looks up to see his baby in danger, knocks the gun out of the guy's hand, and punches and kicks Dino Liberto literally out of the house. Liberto is behind bars. Holly Hickman, Fox News Radio.
The Big Chill and the Big Apple. This St. Patrick's Day.
It's a go in the snow this Saturday, despite the white stuff. Everyone decked out in green. Shamrocks and Lucky Charms on hand here on Fifth Avenue.
I have my little Lucky Charm. He's a little leprechaun. His name is Patty O'Reilly.
Debbie Martino from Brooklyn.
Good afternoon. You are listening to AM 1080 KSEO Santa Cruz on the web at KSEO.com. I'm Rick O'Shea with an update on your Central Coast roadways. Down in Monterey, southbound Highway 1 at Munros Avenue, a traffic hazard, solo vehicle on the right-hand shoulder, partially over the fog line. Heading up and over the hill on Highway